This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success. All right, we'll get started with office hours training on Friday. We've been doing this for over 24 years. Please join us. And just before we bring the other Justin on, I don't know how I get so many Justins in my life. I tell you, because time is my love language, so it must be just in time, right? Nick of time. And anyway, we got two Justin times. More importantly, give me a little bit of background, this Justin, before we bring on the other Justin, about what we actually are doing here at Merival.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. So Merival, what my wife and I have actually built and put together is a group of entrepreneurial couples, and the entrepreneurial couples that we have brought together are focused on really five pillars, five domains: healthy body, healthy mind, healthy soul, healthy family, and healthy marriage. And when we look at what happens for most entrepreneurs that are on purpose, on mission, really driving and creating, is that they get attacked in these five areas, and they don't have a firm foundation in their marriage. They don't have a firm foundation in their family. They don't have a firm foundation in themselves of mind, body, spirit. And often that disrupts the money flow, that disrupts the business flow, that disrupts their ability to serve. And so for us, what we've done is we've brought people in that are all mission-driven entrepreneurs. They may be working with their spouse. They might have one of their spouses that's more just the support person home. But if one person's an entrepreneur in the family, you know that the whole family is an entrepreneurial family. And so that's what we ended up doing. And these families stay together for a year plus. And some of them have been with us since onset for 2.5 years. And some of them are coming into their first retreat here with David. So that's what we do. And it's just been such a blessing to see how people have grown and people have ultimately risen up to their potential in which they've been created for.
Amazing. And I felt the energy just coming in here to Merival, but at the first group meet dinner, as we finished dinner last night, we were talking about appreciating the differences. I believe in an infinite, abundant, unified system. And one of the things that we do to interfere with it is just focus in on how we're the same. And then we never appreciate the differences. So to that measure, I'm bringing another Justin on. Justin Jones Fosu is here. He's the founder and CEO of Work Meaningful. So I think many keynotes that he does, I'm surprised I don't see him at more airports, but this man is speaking all around the country. He has a upcoming book that's exactly on topic, subject matter, to what we are talking about. Hold that up there. Because it's about appreciating differences. It's called I Respectfully Disagree: How to Have a Difficult Conversations in a Divided World. Welcome to Office Hours, the other Justin.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'll turn up the volume there. So when we're talking about a divided world, I have my first question is, do you really believe it's a divided world, or we just create interference or separation of a world that is actually one?
Yeah, I think that the world has the potential to be one. And I think that from a higher philosophical level, there's a great potential for unity. And that's why I love the abundance perspective. How we live it out shows division, right? And for me, division isn't necessarily wrong. When we are disrespectful to each other in the midst of that division, that's the issue, because we're divided on a plethora of things, from issues, from challenges, to who's the GOAT, Michael Jordan or LeBron, or, you know, all of the things. And so we all know the answer to that question. So there is division, but I think a higher level, there's unity, there's one. And I think when we can connect to that oneness, that we are all human beings, that even in the midst of our ideological differences and divisions, that we can still come together through good respect.
Agreed. Justin, I know this is right up your alley.
Justin, it's so great to meet you. And when you think about this, there's a couple things that come up here. And again, I think Justin Bieber had something to do with all these Justins being named. good fellow Canadian. But when you, I just even look at the title of your book, I Respectfully Disagree. So mine's kind of a two-part question if you want to dive in. Number one is, Do you feel, I don't feel like disagreement is the issue in which we deal with. I feel like it's the respectfully that has the major issue in our world. And talk to me a little bit about where the respect level falls off. And then the second question is, when we talk about difficult conversations are something that people have a failure to really kind of lean into because we don't want to seek discomfort. We want to always stay in a state of comfort. And so when you think about having difficult conversations, how do you then bring this in to get used to being uncomfortable so that we can now have the skill set to communicate in an elevated fashion so that we can find oneness with people, even though we may be having, in your words, a difficult conversation? Those are kind of those two parts.
I love those two questions, and I love your name. You've made me so proud, Justin. So to your first question, I agree. Like, we all disagree on things. And what we found in our research, we initially wanted to just solve the whole concept of how do we take really disrespectful disagreement where I'm like, I think it's a stupid idea, Justin, right? Which I often hear. And how do we move that into a place of respectful disagreement? But what we didn't realize that we found in our research was this whole other category called disrespectful agreement. In two ways, disrespectful agreement is one, what a younger generation calls gaslighting, where I'm like, you know what, David, I think Justin's idea was amazing. And then I'm like, saying somebody else, I think that was a stupid idea. Like, where we're in a meeting, but then we talk behind a person's back. The other side is when we haven't learned how to utilize our voice, or we've been so suppressed or put down that often we're disagreeing, but we never bring up our disagreement. Right, in a way. So we're actually disrespecting ourselves in the midst of that. So yes, 100%. I think that the true answer is respect. And we had to redefine respect because I realized everybody sees respect differently. We call it our 10 characteristics of golden respect. And I won't go through all 10, but a couple I want to bring forward. Number one, we think that respect, you know, if you've heard, you have to earn my respect. But why? Why did we get to this whole philosophical moment is that you have to earn respect? Why can't I just freely give it? What we call respect is a distant cousin of forgiveness. Like, we finally realized that forgiveness is really about us rather than the other person. That's the same thing with respect. The other thing is that we've confused and conflated respect with honor, right? So I honor your ideals. I honor your character. I honor, right? That's different than respect. Honor means I hold you in high esteem, where respect is I'm going to show you value and dignity because you're simply a human being. So to answer your first question, 100%. The second question, it actually starts before disagreements even happen. One of the things my mom taught me, my mom is so phenomenal, is that, you know, we would go to events and experiences, engage with people when I was younger that we didn't know a lot about and that we also disagreed with. And she was planting those seeds in me. And so now we challenge people from a practical way. We call it the Circles of Grace Challenge. And the Circles of Grace Challenge is every 6 months or every year, choosing an area that you either don't know a lot about or that you disagree with, and just going to learn, not to convince them of your perspective or your point. And I've been doing these now for the last 3-4 years. And it's taught me a lot, not only about these experiences and people, but also about myself as I engage with them. So that's a pattern of ways that we can consistently put ourselves in moments where we are uncomfortable, that we can enlarge our circles to be able to engage other people who, whether they think differently, believe differently, and even ones that we vehemently disagree with.
It's really, really good. And David says something all the time, which is be more interested than interesting. And from what you're talking about right here, would you say that a lot of your research backs that statement, not only in the sense of be more interested than interesting, but I'm coming to a word that you spoke about, which is the way in which you have difficult conversations, the way in which you show up respectfully is ultimately being curious, and having that lead the way.
Yes. I mean, that's why I can tell David and I are already brothers, because that's one of the things I say, seek to be more interested than interesting. Right. And a lot of that stems from genuineness, right? So some people use that as a slimy technique, right? As I'm trying to get something out of you rather than truly being interested in someone else. And so there's two pillars. We talked about pillar one, which is challenge your perspective. The pillar two and three out of our five is one, pillar two is be the student. When we approach people from a place of learning, that I can learn something from anybody. I don't care what their title is. I don't care if I agree with them, but that there's something to learn. I mean, we always talk about we can learn from our bad managers, right? There's always something to learn so I can be the student. But number three, to your point, Justin, is cultivate your curiosity. And when we cultivate our curiosity and we fill in the gaps with more curiosity rather than conclusions, it allows us to hear people in a whole different way. We give people what we call the power of three model. And the power of three model is where I listen at least to the third level of the conversation instead of bringing it back to myself. Because that's often what we do. We can disagree on something and you may say, Justin, I don't like people who are bald. And I'm like, but I don't like people who have hair, right? Like, okay, I'm bald, by the way. right? But like, when I'm saying that, instead of asking, oh, Justin, tell me why you don't like people who are bald, right? And then you may dive deeper. Well, actually, I went through something when I was younger. And I'm like, wow, like, you know, is there anything else that you learned in that experience? We don't dive deeper because one, we're uncomfortable with simply learning about things that we might disagree with. But number two is that we find our comfort in us talking rather than us exploring someone else. And so cultivate your curiosity is a central practice of what we do.
And to that practice, the cousin of respect being forgiveness, which I love, there's another cousin that we started with, which is gratitude, yeah. Appreciation, finding, as you said, as a student, paying attention, giving intention to the light, the love, and the lesson in everyone. And I think that's the missing component are the two cousins that aren't being utilized in respect. It becomes a matter of a need to be offended, which is an ego-based consciousness. It's an interference. So respect becomes a matter of a reaction fear instead of the solution of gratitude and forgiveness. The two cousins of respect somehow have been kicked out of the house or family and replaced by the ego edging goodness out of the house. And gold and growth out of the house instead of the love, the peace and ease that we are all coexisting in. If you want to learn more about these two cousins, if you want to learn how I can respectfully disagree and have difficult conversations, which just means they're a little bit uncomfortable because we feel a fear of separation when we challenge or have differences in appreciation and forgiveness, you have to follow, you have to read my other Justin friend, the JJ Justin, Justin Jones Fosu. Thank you for joining us. Come on my other shows. You can learn more about them everywhere. Pre-order the book, I Respectfully Disagree, How to Have a Difficult Conversation in a Divided World. It's going to be on Amazon. Thanks so much, Justin, for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
So good to meet you.
You have to come join us, man. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Incredible. To Justin so early in the morning. You know, the other Justin here. Nick, before I get into, well, actually, I'm going to get right into it, Justin. Why do you think it is that people can't appreciate differences? Where does that fear lie?
I think it lies, honestly, David, in insecurity. Because at the end of the day, when we are sitting here and we have a certain opinion, we have a certain feeling, we have a certain emotion, we see our reality as something that is certain. We see our reality as something that we have built our foundation on. And a lot of us build our foundation on things that aren't rooted in truth. The soul knows the truth. And the moment that we have that truth rocked, or we have that foundation kind of like jolted a little bit, it immediately puts us into the defense. And when we go on the defense or on the offense, we no longer become curious, no longer become interested. We no longer become a question asker, but rather we become defensive. We become resentful. We become angry. We become bitter because we have internalized this level of insecurity that we've not been able to understand what that next step is. And so that's true why I feel like difficult conversations are difficult, simply because we have not understood how to become interested and curious and secure in who we are, not that we have to be right, but meaning that we have to be righteous in being willing to have a better question.
You know, there was a moment last night at dinner that I really loved, and we were having a conversation about heaven and hell, which creates respectful disagreements for so many people as defining divine nature and timing and direction. But we are not open-minded and curious. Human beings do something all the time. They misspeak,
yes,
or they misunderstand. And there is so much separation created by misspeaking and misunderstanding, or especially with social media, taking things out of context, which creates misspeaking and misunderstanding, sometimes unintentionally, sometimes intentionally. And if anyone has a larger community and they post a short video, there's so much communication involved. And if we don't have the forgiveness and the appreciation of curiosity, of being more interested down to the third level of conversation into the deeper questions, we create literally so many times separation when we agree with each other. And you could see the conversation as we were leading and facilitating last night. There's a few times where either I misspoke or misunderstood, or they misspoke or misunderstood. And I said, hold on a second, define that, and kind of figured it out. Because if we don't know each other and have an open mind and aren't more interested, I've seen riots actually break out, attacking thoughts and beliefs and words and actions over people who agree with one another. And we've been, if you've been married, probably you've been in a conversation where you get really, really upset, and you find after you calm down, oh, that's what you said. Oh, that's what you did. Oh, I'm so sorry. So that's another reason why to be more interested and more curious is to get alignment with somebody. You have to continually ask questions, because human beings misspeak and mishear, misunderstand all the time. And if you're quick to react, if you have a need to be offended, which I admitted last night at Illuminated is one of my biggest challenges that I work on, you better be more curious and be more interested, or else you're going to create a whole bunch of resistance with people that you agree with. It's amazing. Let's have Nick. We're a third of the way done here. Nick of Time, once you reset the room, you have so many great people here. John's waiting in the green room. We'll have him come on in about five. But Nick of Time, go ahead, reset the room.
Today's topic, of course, is office hours, and we have blessed, incredible guests that are coming through and pouring into this community, you know, with incredible insights, lessons, stories, everything in between. Of course, in between the different guests, such as right now, we'll have some time for Q&A. So as you have those questions, make sure you're using the hand in the lower right-hand corner of your screen to request to join the stage, and we will aim to bring you up.
All right, I'll go ahead and take back over control of the wheel. The Nick of Time, speaking of misspeaking, now, I asked Nick earlier because we were confused. He said Rothling Schaefer. Is that correct?
I accept both. Rothling Schaefer, Rothling Schaefer. Rothling Schaefer is
not Rothling Schaefer.
So Rothling Schaefer is also like the German pronunciation.
That's the way I pronounce it.
And so, like, I never correct people.
This is a misspeaking. This is perfect.
I never correct people unless it's like Roethlisberger, which, like, yeah, there is no.
I represented Lee represented in Roethlisberger, and then the Tolders took him over. But that's great
because there is no B in there. But like, if somebody, and here's the other thing. If somebody takes a stab at this 16-letter complex German name and it comes out and it's Rothling Hofer, Rothling Schaefer, Rothling Schaefer, I'm like, well done.
Yeah. Well, I have a German name that means servant, right? My name means beloved servant, David, beloved Meltzer, waiter, servant. And on my bag tag, you'll see they misspelled my shorter name even. So it must be a German thing. I also, speaking of misspeaking and communicating, I had a friend for a long time, and his name's Saul, S-A-U-L. But for years, I'd introduce him. Hey, this is my pal Saul. And I'd make jokes every time I saw him. Better call Saul. You got an issue. He's a coach, you know. Better call Saul. And literally years into my relationship, I'm there, and someone said, you know, I said, oh, this is my friend Saul. And he's like, or he announced himself on a stage. This is Saul. And I looked up. I'm like, how is it this guy has not told me? Like, we're friends. for years, not just days, right? So I appreciate a man that would be called, as long as you call him, he doesn't care what you call him. Just leave Roethlisberger out there, and we'll have I like kind of the Roethlisberger. That's what we're saying. So I like Roethlisberger.
Yeah,
that's what I like. Roethlisberger.
I like it too.
But I kind of like the shofar too. Anyways, we have our friend waiting in the wings. Nick of Time is stuck. The bad connectivity of Maryval. They have everything here but good internet. So that's why my buddy's here sitting with me. Another Jay's in the house. John Viola coming over, and he is a consultant in the sports world and one of talking about the other football. He is here, I believe, with founder 451 Football Consultancy, and from financial service to football fame, John Viola journey is what I'd love to discuss. And I have a question. What is football intermediation?
Hey, David, good to see you today. I work as an intermediary. Basically, I'm a Jerry Maguire. If you go way back to that,
you're an agent.
I'm a football agent. We're being polite today and calling it for you guys soccer.
Yes, so, thank you. Well, I got to tell you this: you intimately pioneered with FIFA, you know, a variety of different business opportunities. If people in America, if you want to know how powerful FIFA is, let me just tell you this. That I have my offices, my training center, my podcast studio inside SoFi Stadium. It is a $5.5 billion amazing stadium. The screen itself is worth $1 billion. And Kroenke, who built and owns the stadium, he said, there's no way I'm making the adjustments to my stadium for World Cup. And, you know, made major stand. And I'm not taking SoFi, the name, off the stadium for World Cup. We're not calling it Championship Stadium or whatever FIFA wanted him to do. Well, meanwhile, I show up to work this week and there is trucks and they're tearing out everything. And I'm thinking, how can this organization be so powerful that they can get a guy like that? And we're going to have the Championship World Cup game at SoFi now, the new Championship Stadium, they call it. But they're readjusting the entire stadium to fit what's called a pitch. Biggest sports guy, the soccer or football pitch will be able to fit now with the appropriate fans viewing, and I'm sure at a high cost to sit there right on the pitch. But John, you've seen this evolution in power of football. What are some of the changes over there to agentry? Have you guys taken on? Well, you kind of led the way in NIL, in contracts and in a different way to look at sports. What were some of the differences in the past that now have transferred over to America?
Quite interesting. You know, talking about FIFA, I was one of the very first FIFA registered football agents in the world, going back over 30 years ago. So I know the strength of FIFA, how big they are, David, how powerful they are, which you wouldn't believe. But look, there's been massive changes in this game since I started 30 years ago. And just recently, they've changed the whole ethos of how new agents are coming into this business by regulating to have an exam again. Before, they relaxed it in 2015, and the whole world became a soccer agent, a football agent. Everybody and their dog became an agent. And we've seen the opportunity then, because a lot of people were asking us, right, it's easy to come into this business, but we don't know anything about it. What do we do? It's great having a license, but what do you actually do to become an agent? What do you do? And you'll know better than me, David, what it entails. It doesn't just entail, hey, FIFA agent license. It's what you do after that. So we've seen the gap there and started teaching people. And now we have got two businesses. One is our football agency, a soccer agency business, which does the day-to-day transactions and transfers of players. And then we've got JV Academy, which teaches people all around the world how to be the next Jerry Maguire.
Well, I love it. Jerry Maguire is my favorite love story. So based off of a backdrop of sports. But you know what's so funny is people ask me all the time, what does it take to be an agent? And obviously we have to be licensed over here in a variety of different sports and you're capped a certain percentage. And I always say, you know, it's really simple, but it's complex in how simple it is. And what I mean by that is there's two things that you need to be able to do to be a great licensed agent. One, you got to be able to get clients. And two, you have to be able to keep clients. So one of the great tests that I had as a young executive running Lee Steinberg Sports Entertainment in America was I would take young sports agents out to nightclubs and I'd find what I would think would be the most popular full role. And I'd say, look, get her not only to leave with you, but date her for a year and then you can be a sports agent. So if you can convince her to leave with you, that's one thing. But if you can keep her as your girlfriend with everybody else all the time trying to steal her away from you, then you have what it takes to be a sports agent. Well, Justin has a different perspective. He obviously is extremely versed in sports. So, Justin, what's curious about John to you?
John, it's so unique, your perspective. And for myself, I came from the world of the National Hockey League and had about a decade as a health and performance director there. And obviously, you come across a multitude of agents. I had an agent as I was a player before crossing over into the coaching side. There's a question that is just it's literally sitting on the edge of my tongue as you were talking. Because you said something of everybody and their dog wants to be an agent, or everybody's an agent now. Well, if everybody's an agent, what have the successful ones, what have the ones that have been able to differentiate themselves, what have they been able to do to ultimately create the relationship with player, create the relationship with the staff, create the relationship with managerial team? To ultimately make sure that they can serve their client well and still make sure that they can get the job done of what is necessary. And so that takes a very, very special balance, a very special person to be able to be just go from having your license to now go and actually be thriving in this space. Exactly.
JV Academy. What are you teaching at the JV Academy?
Well, listen, how much time have we got, guys? You know,
we'll take
us till tomorrow morning to answer that question.
If you were to give your top two things that separate you from everybody else, what is that?
One, trust. The person that you're dealing with has to trust you, right? And you have to trust him. You're getting in this together. Go back to the Jerry Maguire story when, you know, it was only him and that one player and how he worked really, really hard for him. So the very, very first thing you need to have with you and your player, no matter what sport it is, you need to trust each other implicitly, especially him with you when you're starting. And then for me, the second thing I tell all these new agents is, you put your heart and soul into it as if this is your brother, as if this is your best mate, as if it's your father, or David, in your case, maybe your mother, whatever it may be. You're saying, wow, this is somebody that I'm going to die for. And if you do that and you've got the trust together, then you should be able to go forward. I always say to the guys, if you've got a player and he's got a problem, you should be in the top two or three people he's calling. And that's the type of relationship you should have with your players. Because if they've got a problem, they go, oh, I'm going to phone my pal, my granny, my friend, but I'm not phoning my agent. You ain't doing the job right.
That's so true, John. And one of the funny things is, one, I want to thank you for noting that I've branded myself a mama's boy. So it seems to be world renowned now. Everybody knows Dave Meltzer's. I showed up to dinner.
Let me ask you, David, if you were representing your mum, you would put your heart and soul into it. Is that right?
You knew it, and you absolutely know. Last question real quick, and it's a little bit more subtle in the success that you've had and I've had in this industry. We're old enough that even some people call us legends. That's really old when you're five. Right? That's not too bad. But, you know, I talk and have been taught by the best about spheres of influence and understanding when you're recruiting clients, there's spheres of influence to have trust with. It goes beyond the player because there's so many people reaching out that these spheres of influence have a great statistical success in what you're doing. In America, one of the secret sauces I had as an agent was I would develop relationships with the trainers. And the reason is everybody was hitting up the coaches and the parents and the school coaches and the other to get the players or even other players that play with that player. But nobody talks to the trainer. But meanwhile, the trainer talks to the player more than anyone. He has more trust with the player than anyone. And they don't lose their jobs. They're there like 50 years. So, I mean, how many times as agents do we go in and the person our relationship with gets fired and now we're out of luck? So is there a certain person within your football that is a key person in order to develop relationships for that sphere of influence that's so necessary for success?
Great question, David. And I'm going to tell you that something, a little tip that I give to all these new people when they're starting. Of course, everybody wants to speak to the coach and everybody wants to speak to the player's friends and the player's mother or whatever it may be to try and get in to sign them or to sign their friends. But one of the tips I said was, who do these guys speak to every day? Well, in soccer, they speak to the doctor most days because a lot of them have got injuries and they trust the doctor implicitly. So I tell them, get close to the doctor at soccer clubs. And if you can get into the doctor and make a good relationship with him and show him how transparent and honest and how good a job you can do, he's going to recommend you to the guys. Now, who doesn't trust a doctor? Well, most people do. So if the doctor says, hey, I know this guy, David Meltzer, he's a really good guy, you maybe should be having a wee chat, you're there. And then even people like the physio at the club, or even the kit man, I don't know if we would call it the same in the USA, the guy that's putting out the kit, that's building a relationship, that's speaking to these guys every day, these are the people that other agents might not look at. Now, I'm maybe giving a wee bit away here. I'm maybe giving a lot away.
See, I'm retired from that business, so I can give all my secrets.
No, I don't mind. I'm an open book. I would let anybody know anything because there's enough business out there for the right people. And our job is that we're teaching the right people how to do it professionally and correct. And a great question that people ask me on a regular basis, why do we do it? Because I'm still at the sharp end, David, doing transfers. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I decided to mentor someone because a friend asked me, go and mentor my friend, they want to become an agent. And I says, look, I'm traveling the world doing my own deals. I don't have any time to go and mentor anybody. But I've done it. And I've done it because he asked me. And then the penny dropped and an epiphany came. Wow, I actually enjoyed helping this guy. And I transformed his life from a menial job he had to becoming an agent, moving out his house to another big house. His family have went to another world. And I thought, wow, I love this. And I got a buzz out of helping this guy. But also, I actually earned some money as well because with the first deal we'd done together, we shared. And I thought, quite a good business idea. Why don't we teach people to a professional level and share business if they want to share it with us? But the key here is 95% of the people that we teach come back to us because we do the job correctly. And that's our business model, David, and it's been magnificent since.
Yeah, and John, one reason I wanted to have you on, besides the legendary brand that you've built, is that you're a community builder as well. And what I've learned and you have learned when we give and pour into our community, those are the people that will, like I said, buy from each other and sell for each other for a lifetime. And is a legacy that allows us to make a lot of money, help a lot of people. And if you love sports, it's still a lot of fun, which is my mission. And to have someone like you over the pond from me, and I'm going to make sure next time I travel to the UK that you and I get together and enjoy one of my favorite spectator sports in the world. If you haven't been to a Premier League game, it is better than World. It's so much different than World Cup. World Cup gets a little corporate, very exciting. It's fun to be there and watch. But my last one was Chelsea, Man City in Chelsea. And I think it ranked up there far beyond almost any other sporting event. Yeah, the energy, the excitement is amazing. Well, everybody reach out if you're interested in understanding how to have a career in sports. The JV Academy is the place to be. The legend, John Viola, joining us today. Please promise me you'll come back on other shows of mine. We want to have these interesting conversations.
I'd love to and find out a little bit more about you and your mother. Okay.
I love that. Well, you know what's so funny? I used to tout at Lee Steinberg years ago that we had $2 billion in management. Now that's wow. Like three clients. That's like three clients now. So
it's a lot less
headaches. Anyway, John, thank you for joining us. We'll look forward to seeing you. You're amazing.
Okay, pleasure. Great to see you. Thanks, guys.
John, thank you. All right, the amazing John Viola, and I had to clarify the football fame as an intermediary, a licensed intermediary. It's like a barrister. It's an amazing different culture. And obviously, Justin has a lot of experience in hockey with world competition. Hockey obviously being a global sport far before NFL football was a global sport. And still my favorite moment and my favorite movie, by the way, is Miracle on Ice. Awesome. In my business philosophy, I've never seen someone play chess. And that's why he had the greatest sporting moment of our century. Amazing. If anyone hasn't seen the movie about the 1980 Olympic America's team and how he understood human psychology and self-sacrifice. And so Herb Brooks, to me, probably the greatest coach of all time. I idolized how he played chess, you know, to the point where it's like, you know, you see him, it's like, well, why is everybody, you know, getting everyone to hate you? Because if they hate me, then they'll learn, right? They want enough for each other.
The crazy part about that too, David, is as you think about it, it goes right back to what John was just talking about, is what Herb Brooks was so amazing at was creating love within his locker room and a love for each player. He loved each player deeply, even though he comes across as this guy that was hard and this pusher, but he wanted to elevate everybody and he wanted to create this relationship with each and every person and elevate the relationships of every other person in and around that locker room. And he was just a savant at that. And that's at the end of the day, that's the checkers, is the chess that's being played. And what elevated him. But I think also going back to what John talked about is he had the trust of everyone. He was able to create deep relationships and be able to really lean in a powerful way. It's at the end of the day, if you look at any great thing that you have in life, anything that you succeeded in, it probably comes because there's a powerful relationship behind it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Speaking of powerful relationships, and I'm here in Tucson at the Couples Collective, and it's bringing high levels of connectivity to couples. But even in the movie, I found it interesting to learn from someone. You know, it takes a lot to be the best in the world, to create the best wins in the world, to even win a gold medal, let alone to beat the Russian hockey team at that time. And they do a nice job of showing the lack of success that he had in his personal relationships with his wife. Mm-hmm. But I still study that. Is it takes a certain there's no perfect people. There's perfect people for us. And his wife seemed to be the perfect spouse. And I see that here. I see it in my own life. Have learned to appreciate my wife so much more. Because like Herb, there's times where the balance of time, now I'm better at it now, but because I had this goal that wasn't necessarily for family, although I lied to my family and said, I'm doing this for you, right? Herb did not win the gold medal in the Olympics for his family, right? And yet he, you know, work through that with his spouse and his, and I'm sure, you know, if he, you know, as he passed, you know, I always wonder, you know, what he would have said, Was it worth it? And I know for me, the nice thing about losing everything is it gave me an awakening that, wow, all of that lying to self wasn't worth it. I'm going to pour into my family. And if I don't have non-negotiable time, my own health and my own family, you know, this temporary illusion of over $100 million that is making and rendering me empty definitely isn't worth it. And there's so many lessons in that movie. Check out Miracle on Ice. It's an old movie about the 1980s. It's a Disney film, 1980. We got 1 minute before we bring our next friend on. So I'm going to reset the room. Nick of time, do you have connectivity? Because if not, I'm going to set it. You hear?
Check one, two, three. Check.
All right.
Three, loud and clear.
We got 1 minute before bringing amazing Anthony Ramore on. Can you reset the room? We're in the final quarter. Hold up the four fingers for the incredible Buckeye family out there. Go ahead.
It is the fourth quarter, everybody, and we are rocking and rolling in today's Power Hour with David Meltzer and Justin Rothling's Hover, whatever you prefer.
Not Rothling's Burger, but not Rothling's Burger. We know that.
Yes, exactly. Not like the quarterback. But with that said, everybody, we've obviously been blessed with incredible insights, lessons, stories with our guests, and we're going to keep it rocking with Anthony to close this one out. As we will be, and not only have time for Justin and David's takeaways, but also one quick question. So make sure that you already are on stage. Please let me know if you have a question. If not, request to join the stage, and we will come over to you. Now, David, I'll pass it back over to you for our last guest, some takeaways, and then one question to round us out.
You got it. We'll also be in Dallas tomorrow for a meetup. So come and join us there in Dallas if you're interested. Vid at dmeltzer.com, as well as Justin and I, as a gift for Office Hours in the premiere of Office Hours Season 5, streaming on Apple at the airports and hotel rooms as well, on all of the different streaming channels, Roku, et cetera. Season 5 of Office Hours will be giving away my book. I'll sign it, send it to you, pay for shipping, and the book. David at dmeltzer.com. I will be at 11 a.m. Central Time at the Renaissance Dallas Hotel tomorrow. All right, it's time to bring our last friend on for the day. Anthony Ramore is here. He's based here in Arizona, CEO and founder of Grow My Security Company. Welcome, Anthony.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Friday.
Thank you so much. First of all, thank you for your service. We were talking about freedom last night as well. And I think that people overlook how wonderful this country is and how many people have put our country and our freedom first. And you're one of those people. So I want to thank you. 17 years in the United States as a military policeman and understanding and learning how to be an expert in security while you were doing so. But you're a disabled vet now. And our disabilities bring out abilities, right? We all have disabilities. Some of us are lucky enough to have disabilities in the exterior. Most of us, like me, they're hidden deep inside and they cause much more damage and much more challenges when we don't even know we have them, let alone everybody else sees them. When you became disabled, after providing service and value to our country, giving us the freedoms that we have, how did you deal with the bitterness or resentment or the guilt or basically the ego-based response to feeling that you may have been punished?
Gosh, that's a deep question, David. Thank you for asking it, though. That thought process didn't come until many years after my service. And my service to the country, you know, was more towards overseas and then also stateside as a 9/11 initial responder. So I'm a combat veteran and then also, initial responder to 9/11. The ailments that I have now have definitely made me think about my service only because I have a family, right? So thinking about, you know, the longevity of my life, am I going to be able to provide my family long term? Am I going to be able to raise my children? Being able to throw football with my son, being able to walk my daughter down the aisle. These are all things that I have thought about, that makes me rethink, well, you know, was it all worth it? You know, of course, my selfless service, giving back to the country was one thing, but now it's affecting my personal life, thinking about my life expectancy. So it's a deep question. I think about it often.
Anthony, again, thank you much for your service and just for being so selfless. When you go through this and you talk about, and I think for a lot of people listening or even watching, they've had to make transitions from one career to the other, transitions from one business to the other. Mm-hmm. And obviously for you, you get a transition going from the service now ultimately growing your own security company. And so what was your journey like from going from something that was so structured, so regimented, such as the military, to then now having the freedom of entrepreneurship and being able to put this together and now coming out so successful in the way in which you are? What was that journey like for you?
Yeah, thank you again for another great question. So, well, I don't own a security company. So I've worked in the security industry for 20 years. Growing companies, making them successful. What I do is digital marketing for the security industry, right? So I work with companies and growing their business. So what I did is I was the face of these companies for 20 years, right? And what I did was I was always selling security guard service, doing the digital marketing, growing the business from an online perspective and as well as their stature. So getting back to your question, the transition, gosh, well, the military teaches you to be resilient, first and foremost, right? And something always rang out in my mind. I heard the drill sergeant teaching us how to dig out fighting positions, right? And something that he said was, you always improve upon your position. Now, David, I've watched your videos. I see your clips, right? And I see you talk about building yourself and selling yourself and branding yourself. Well, same concept, right? So when you're talking about in terms of building a fighting position, now the enemy sees you from coming in from a back position, but you want your position to blend in, right? You don't want to be seen. So that's what he meant about always building upon your position. And I applied that to my personal life and now my professional life, where I'm always building upon my position, my personal brand, my companies, right? Always wanting to be better than I was the day before. So the military teaches you a lot about entrepreneurship, not directly, but indirectly. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. It's the resiliency. We know we have to build amazing resiliency to build amazing culture and processes.
And, you know, I love the fact that you realize the social silos that exist today. The total addressable community is so large that you could create a digital marketing company specific to growing security companies, not just growing companies in general. And I see a lot of people make that mistake because there's so many variables involved in digital marketing that if we get too broad and say, oh, I'm a digital marketer. And so you can deal with someone running for Senate, you can deal with a security company, and you can deal with a speaker, an author, or an entrepreneur, or a fashion brand. That seems almost impossible to me. So one of the things and reasons that I wanted to have you on is that by understanding the social silo of your expertise, knowing the skills that you have, the knowledge of who and what, as well as your desire, which is aligned as well in your essence of the security field, industry, jobs, et cetera, that you're able to develop a greater strategy that's aligned with what's doing well on social media, what's stable on social media, and what you think is going to be well. And that formula creates a greater value for the people that are in your social silo. What is one of the strategic things for company growth that you utilize in the security industry specifically?
All great feedback, David, and thank you for that question. So for me, the most powerful piece is branding, right? So getting the information out there of who you are, what you do, and why you do it, right? So 20 years ago, I'll tell you a quick story. 20 years ago, I was working for a small security company, and the owner of the company was always knocking on my wall. Anthony, how many phone calls did you make today? Right? And I'm like, golly, I hate cold calling. Right? And I said, there's got to be a better way of doing this. So after I retired from the military, now 100 said, how am I going to do the day to day? How am I going to feed my family, keep the lights on, right? And continue and have my legacy. And I said, doing what I have been doing over the past 20 years was building a brand. I did some research. I changed my direction of my college degree. And I went towards digital marketing, trying to understand how I can professionally brand a company from an online perspective, right? And the company I was working for, you couldn't find them on the internet, right? So I searched, the internet and how to build the performance of a website, rebuilt the website, worked on their Google Analytics, and started doing social media and blogging and all the other things that come with digital marketing. And within 90 days, they were on the first page of Google, the 1 and 3 spot. Now, analytics have changed dramatically over the past 20 years, right? So we had to conform to the changes of Google. And since then, we have done that successfully. And I use that same business model today to both my companies. So I also have another company called Grow My Real Estate Company. Same model, different industry.
That is super smart. If you want to have a strategy that's aligned with the skills and knowledge and desire of your industry, career, or job, there's two of them that are well taken care of. Obviously, from our unbelievable guest, and we appreciate his service, both first responder in 9/11, and of course, in his military service, applying to Grow My Security Company, as well as Grow My Real Estate Company. You're looking at one of the leaders in that strategy of digital marketing, the fastest and easiest way to grow your community of people that will buy from you and sell for you, much easier than making phone calls, emails, and of course, in person. Scales much quicker. Most people, it used to take, by the way, when you talk about hating phone calls, it would take you about a month to get in touch with 1,000 people. Now, if you're doing it correctly with people with Anthony Ramore, it takes less than a minute to get in contact. Now it's just a matter of getting people to call you back, DM you back, email you back, contact you back. So go ahead and reach out to my friend Anthony Ramore, anthonyramore.com. We'll come on. We have more shows for you, my friend. Thank you for your service. Keep doing the great work. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
You too. All right. We got enough time, nick of time. Someone has to mute themselves. It sounds like Glenn Lundy, but I'm not sure it is. Nick of time, why don't you reset the room, and I can either ask Justin a question. Justin can ask me a question, or somebody in the last 4 minutes can ask us a question. Nick of time, which way do you want to roll?
Let's roll with a live question here on Clubhouse. I know Hatul has been patiently waiting. So Hatul, it's great to see you. Thanks for showing up here each and every Friday. Feel free to unmute yourself and ask David and Justin your question. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for the opportunity. Running out of time, so I'll get straight to it. Dave, you teach about being a ferocious Buddha. How would you, obviously you might not outline that, but then how would you advise us to kind of reconcile these two seemingly contrasting, but I guess ideal states?
Yeah, I came up with the ferocious Buddha because I was studying time, and I realized that people have a real difficult time detaching from outcomes. And so if I said, surrender, or you read Michael Singer's Surrender Experiment, people immediately go, you don't have goals? You've surrendered? You're faith based. God's just going to do everything for you. You can lie home, hide on your mom's couch, sick and broke, and dream about a Ferrari, and they're just going to drive it up to your driveway. No, that's not what it is. It's, I live in the will of God. I live with an omniscient, all powerful source of energy, and I am ferocious during the day of activity, 24 hours. I'm a ferocious being. In the divine direction, in the divine time of where I think I want to be or better. And that's where the Buddha comes in. That's where the faith comes in, is that I have surrendered to the outcomes that I know or understand, knowing that I'm protected, promoted, and loved by this God, this source. And I'm going to be ferocious in my free will and my faith and my wisdom to get there. But I am a Buddha when it comes to the outcomes, because I don't understand or know infinite, omniscient, and all powerful. Because the only thing that makes me omniscient and all powerful is what I'm connected to and through, not my own embodiment. And I know my friend to my left, as we have 2 minutes, is going to hit on what he thinks ferocious Buddha means as well.
Thank you, David. And it's such a great question, because I think, piggybacking what David said, so many of us believe that we just have to force our way through things. We have to judge ourselves and see what the outcomes are as whether we were successful or whether we were not. But everything that we go through is a learning experience. And I actually define performance as the capacity and desire to intentionally and consistently behave at a level equal to your potential. And the thing about this is that when I ask people what they think performance is, every single thing they say is attainment of goals or winning or results. And at the end of the day, it goes to what David said, was it's all a judgment on an outcome. But here's the thing. When we think about, and we break this down deeper, capacity and desire, everybody has a desire to have the Ferrari. Everybody has the desire to have the influence. Everybody has the desire to have the stage. But you don't have the capacity in order to handle what that is going to require as your outcome, because you haven't acted or behaved intentionally and consistently in alignment with what God has ultimately already prepared for you. And so the biggest thing that we have to do is come back to, how do we grow capacity? How do we grow capacity to handle what it is? And that's where ferocious Buddha comes out for me, is intentional, consistent behaviors are ultimately a vote for the future you that you want to become. And if you can lean into that, that's when you ultimately realize the outcome that you're looking for.
I love this guy. He's the very similar line frequency things that I do in just a much more elegant way. But be kind to your future self. And that's why we do good deeds in a ferocious Buddhist manner. More importantly, nick of time is 7 a.m. Pacific time. And you know what time that is. It's time to hand it off to the greater good. And I want to thank everyone on Breakfast of Champions for joining us today. Nick, close out the room.